Good morning, fellow students, and welcome back to another episode of Legacy Weapon, your guide to the Legacy format. I am Jamie Keller.
And I'm Drew Walton.
We are your guide. We are here to help you get into the Legacy format from scratch or get better if you're already in there. As you all know, we are hosted on GatheringMagic.com. It's a great website with a lot of great content. And we are hosted by CoolStuffInc.com, who recently had an angel sale, just to show kind of the odd sales they have. In episode one, we told you what the format is. And this episode, what are we going to talk about today, Drew?
We are going to talk about a strategy concept.
Ooh, it's getting deep.
Yeah. Harkens back to an old article by Mike Flores.
The original article is by Mike Flores.
All right, I remembered correctly.
In 1999, it was apparently originally published on The Dojo, which right. is like four generations of Magic websites ago.
Yeah, RIP The Dojo.
Oh, The Dojo.
But it was the article is titled, Who's the Beatdown?
Whoa. You're getting ahead of yourself.
Whoa.
How are you?
I'm good.
Is there any new current events?
There is actually a decent, there's a new current event. There was a ban list announcement.
How did the ban list affect Legacy?
Not at all.
Okay. Good news.
Well, I mean, depends. I mean, if you were really hoping for a ban on a Miracles card, then you're out of luck.
You know, I'm glad not. That would make our only deck tech be worthless. That would be so terrible. We did not think that through all the way. Doing our only deck tech on the only maybe bannable deck immediately before ban and restricted update. So good news, everyone.
Right. You don't have to learn everything over again.
There is another minor update, but I want to tell everybody because I'm really excited about it. I don't know how much our listeners or even you, Drew, are familiar with Magic Online, but they have something called Leagues. And the idea is for people who can't play for 5 hours straight. There's no reason that you should have to online. You can show up whenever you want. So basically you join the league and it is a tournament, but you can play whenever you want. You have 5 games to do over the next 2 weeks or something like that. So log in. It'll randomly assign you with an opponent who's also in the league and you play that way. They cool. do not have them for Legacy yet, but they just announced yesterday that they are bringing them in. They will be having Legacy leagues. Excuse me, soon. And because of that, I am now bought in. I have a Magic Online account. I don't really have reliable internet, so maybe I put the cart before the horse there. But
Maybe.
But we'll see about that. I'm ecstatic. I love that. That makes it so that anybody who says that they don't have a local Legacy scene, now you do. Now there's no excuse. If you have internet, you have a local Legacy scene now.
Right.
Winner, winner. I don't like chicken.
No chicken for
no
you.
No chicken. Okay.
No soup for you.
Now, let's move on to our actual topic. You were talking about Who is the Beatdown by Mike Flores. So what was the article about? What's the idea about? Because we're not going to rehash somebody else's article, but this was a defining kind of article moment, way of thinking about the game. And it has influenced basically every professional and every writer ever since. It's a very important gameplay idea. So what does
it mean? Most important Magic the Gathering strategy article ever written, maybe?
Maybe ever since the idea of card advantage.
Maybe, yeah.
Which, oddly enough, we will probably have an edit article on that at some point. Probably. Episode on that. Okay.
We don't want to just totally rehash it, but it is worth noting. I mean, this article was written over 15 years ago, and I mean, you could read the article, but it will make a lot of references to cards that you may never have heard of because they were major tournament staples at the time. But things have changed.
Yeah, we will link to it in the show notes. But this is something that even gets revisited. I mean, heck, Mike Flores revisited it again in 2012. So
right.
Yeah, it stays relevant.
Yeah. So what was your question?
What is it?
So the concept is, in a nutshell, that at all times there are two players in a game, and one of them wants to end the game quickly, and the other one wants the game to sort of to extend the game in order to try to get an advantage later on.
Right. In a game of two-player Magic, it's a zero-sum game. Anything that is good for you is bad for your opponent in exactly equal measure. Tiny caveat, nobody wants to draw, but really you're trying to win. If it is to your advantage for the game to go faster, then it's to your opponent's advantage in exactly equal measure for the game to not go faster. If you have the option of all players gain 10 life, You might not know right now who that helps more, but it's going to help one of you more than the other, by right. definition.
And you can usually make a pretty good guess as to who it's going to help more.
Yes. And so that speed, that who wants to gain life, who wants it to go faster, who wants to go slower, that is the principle. And that sounds really simple. That sounds like, you know, you and I can cover it in about 2 minutes of...
Like we're done, right?
We're done.
Podcast?
Yeah. Yeah. Be aware. What do you want to do? No, that is the principle which takes an entire career of professional magic to be an expert at. And we're going to try to squeeze it into a half hour.
Yeah.
Tell us about kind of the easiest way to think about it, two decks. We've talked about some decks that are fast and some decks that are slower. Talk about how that goes.
Okay. So if you think about Miracles, for example, that's a deck we've talked about a fair amount. That's definitely one of the slower decks, and that's usually going to be let's define a couple of terms first. The title of it, like I said, Who's the Beatdown? That's one of the two roles. That's, as you might guess, the player who wants to end the game quickly. The other player is going to be the control. And this changes based on game state and based on what decks are involved. Your deck might be the beatdown in some matchups, but the control in others. But Miracles is usually going to be the control most of the time. So in a matchup with a deck like Delver that's trying to get creatures on the board and attack, Delver is going to be the beatdown the majority of the time, at least in that matchup. And then Miracles will be the control. That means that at any given moment, the Delver deck is trying to press ahead to try to end the game quickly, and Miracles is going to, you know, trade one for one, so use removal spells to get rid of the cards, like Delver's creatures. It is going to be willing to just not develop its own board position in order to try to get advantages for further down the road.
Right. So a lot of time it does come down to your deck and your opponent's deck. And when you sit down, you don't know what your opponent's playing, but that's kind of what you're here for, so that you can learn what all the different decks are and the different strategies. By game two, or even by a few turns into turn one, game one, you should have an idea over which deck is probably the beatdown.
Part of the whole point of this is figuring out as quickly as possible what it's called... figuring out what your role is.
Yeah. And I'll get to in a minute why it's important to know what your role is, and I'll use an example of when I did a terrible job at that. But just to kind of further explain the positions, if you are a burn player and you're trying to deal just damage to your opponent's face, well, if the opponent has time to do what they want to do, their stuff's going to be more powerful. You know, the things you're doing in Legacy are stronger than lightning bolts. If the game goes long, yeah, they're going to definitely draw into and play their 15-15 or their reusable counterspell or their card draw engine or whatever it is that they're using to win. They will win if the game goes long enough. If you don't kill them, they will get to do right. their plan, and their plan is strong. They have...
Although this changes sometimes though, right? Because if you get them down under 3 life, well, they now need to end the game real fast because you're probably going to draw a spell that's going to kill them.
Exactly. Who has inevitability? If the game continues as it's going right now, who's going to win? So if I'm dealing you 3 damage a turn and you're dealing me 1 damage a turn and there's no relevant cards in hand or on the field, well, one player has inevitability. Depending on what your life total is, you know who will win unless something changes. And if you are the control, if you want the game to go long, you want to just make sure that you have that inevitability, and then you want to make sure you get to that end game. I'll use a quick example to try to help. I play elves, and we haven't done a deck tech, but one of the things that it can do is it can combo out and go from 0 creatures on the battlefield to 30 creatures on the battlefield in one turn. One of the other things it can do is it has discard. Well, I looked at my opponent's hand through one spell, and I saw that he had the combo card, but he needed to draw something else to make it go off. He wasn't going off right now.
Was this an Elves mirror match?
It was an Elves mirror match.
Okay.
And I had the opportunity to sacrifice one of my guys to hurt my board position to make him discard that combo piece. But I didn't. I didn't want to abandon my board state. One other thing Elf does is kind of snowball exponentially its board state. So it really does need to have creatures on the field to work well. So I decided that I wanted to power ahead. I was going to be the beatdown. I was going to try to advance my gameplay more than I'm interfering with the opponents. Next turn, he combos off and puts 30 creatures on the field and beats me to death. Because he drew... It wasn't that there was a specific card he needed. He just needed, like, a land. he drew a land and it worked.
Yeah.
And I should have realized that right then I was not the beatdown. He was going to be able to end the game quickly right then. I needed to be in the control role. I needed to stop him. I needed to interfere with him. I needed to make the game go for more than two turns because I was not going to win in two turns. And yeah. He was maybe going to win in two turns and did. That is the danger of not knowing your role. It's also the danger of putting too much emphasis on which deck you're playing. Because in a mirror match, you say, oh, nobody's the beatdown. It's the same. Someone's always the beatdown.
Right. I mean, and even if you have the exact same deck list, one of you is going to have a slightly faster start than the other. And so by, the second or third turn, you know, one of your roles should have, you know, you should be figuring out what your roles are at that point.
Right. And it does change turn by turn. Say you had the same deck, and let's do burn.
Sure.
You have the same deck. Let's say you have the same opening hand.
Yeah.
Some creatures and some removal. All right. Well, if the first player goes and the second player goes and they just keep doing the same thing, odds are the player who went on first, the player who is on the play rather than being on the draw, is going to win
because
they're going to attack one more time by turn five. By turn five, right. They'll have to attack five times, their opponents four times, and they will just win. So in that time, just knowing that you're on the draw means before you even draw your opening hand, you know you're probably the control in that game.
Right.
And that can shift because you're rarely going to have the exact same opening hand. If your opponent then has a lot of removal and you have a lot of the creatures, okay, well, now you want to be able to beat down quickly and they have the ability to counter the things you're doing and draw the game out longer. It's a part of the initial article. Some of the quick things to look at are who has more life and who has less life.
Yep.
If you have more damage, if you have the ability to do more damage, you're probably the beatdown deck. If you have more removal, you're probably the control.
Right.
Now, that is almost more of incidental, because if you're having more removal, you're doing that because you want to draw the game out. You want to trade one for ones. You want to draw one for one cards to pick which card you want, like Miracles. Because if you can just keep countering what they do, eventually you're going to lock them out. And you just need to keep stopping them at every turn.
Right. So one thing that's not really discussed very much in the, or maybe even at all, in the original article is combo. It is sort of the assumption back in the late 90s was that decks are mostly going to win by attacking with creatures. Well, that is still largely true in today's Legacy. There are definitely decks that can win without having to attack with creatures, or maybe it's an attack with one really huge creature. And so, like Jamie's example, you also have to look at whether your deck is capable of doing something really explosive and putting a game-ending creature or a combination of cards, like maybe the Miracles countertop lock on an empty board is almost a game-ending combo itself. Whether your opponent's deck is able to do that, whether you are able to do that, and whether someone is threatening to end the game by means other than just reducing your life total to zero, but by executing their combo. And whoever is closer to executing a combo like that is probably the beatdown also.
Right. The who's the beatdown comes down to who is able to end the game faster and who has the inevitability. And sometimes this is unpredictable beyond just having mirror matches or your hands. Storm is one of the decks, we've alluded to it, which can win sometimes on turn one. It usually doesn't, but it in theory can. And there are different variants of Storm. I won't go too much into the details, but I was listening to a wonderful report where somebody was explaining how in this certain matchup of Storm Deck A versus Storm Deck B, Storm Deck A is the control deck. Storm is never the control deck. They are, you know, in theory, or at least in the way people think, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead, put all my eggs in one basket, and smash face on turn one.
Right.
People who do that usually have trouble winning very much with Storm because they don't understand that sometimes you're the control, or sometimes the other person's control is so good that you need to maybe have two baskets of eggs or something like that.
Right.
But not knowing that you're sometimes the control, having the mindset of I am the beatdown, I am always the beatdown. If I don't win by turn two, I'm not going to win. Maybe that's even true against normal decks.
Right.
When you play somebody else who also has the same mentality, one of you is wrong. You know,
yeah.
If you both fizzle and nobody combos out by turn three, well, somebody's still going to win. You might win by, you know, attacking with a 1-1 who you've never attacked with before or something like that. But
you think those decks run creatures, but yes.
So someone will eventually win something. You might deck them because they were on the draw and you were on the play. Who right. knows? Someone will win, and you need to figure that out. In this one matchup, one of the two Storm decks plays a lot of discard in their sideboard. Mm-hmm. And so they want to disrupt your opponent because their opponent is a little bit more fragile. So if you can, you don't want to try for your combo on turn one in that matchup ever, because you might falter, they might interfere with you as you're going off. If instead you take your first one or two turns to set yourself up, you have the ability, depending on your hand, to keep them from going off. Because in that case, you sort of have an idea that if the game goes to turn four, you're really favored.
Right, because the whole point of this, of playing this slightly slower Storm deck, is that it is more consistent. And so if you are able to keep your more explosive opponent from going off really fast, then you have inevitability, because you're going to find your pieces faster than they are after a couple of discard spells have resolved.
Right. So very important, beyond what are the two decks, beyond what is my opening hand, is identifying your role. And another important thing is knowing when that role changes. If you are on the beatdown, it's possible that you are just the beatdown. You know, if you are attacking and attacking and attacking, and then you just kill them and you win, well, fine, you beat it down.
Hooray! Hooray! You did it right.
it's done. You didn't need our help for that. If instead you're the control, eventually control has to become the beatdown, or they can't
win. Because you do still have to win the game, right?
Right. If all you do is counter spells and keep back blockers, well, you're doing a great job being the control. You're making the game go long. But unless you're doing something really weird, you do eventually need to turn the switch and attack.
Super secret tech is playing a 65-card deck in control, so you can just counter their stuff forever and eventually make them deck themselves.
No one do that. You're the worst. Right. You're the worst Sherpa. Just the
right.
worst.
No, right. I'm just using humor to elucidate your point, right. Which is, yeah, that's not a victory plan. You right. have to have something else that you're doing.
And here's the thing. Say you're playing Miracles and you have your countertop lock. All right, well, you think, I've got them. This is the inevitability. I am done. All right, well, I can just sit back. I can take my time now because they can't do anything. Well, your opponent, unless they're playing a bad deck, they have an answer.
They have an answer.
They have
especially
an answer.
After sideboarding, your opponent has an answer to whatever it is that you...
Right.
Your stupid combo, your opponent always has an answer somewhere in their deck.
So even though you think you have inevitability, even though you have the commanding board presence, if you let the game go to turn 40 without doing anything, they will eventually get around your answer and they will start beating down again.
Right. And you may still be ahead at that point, but not as far ahead as you were.
Right. You need to end the game quickly once you can. Once you've gotten to that end game, once you've played your 15-15, once you have done what it was that you were trying to get to the late 15, game.
15-15s are good in combat. You should probably attack.
Probably attack.
Complicated analysis.
It is shocking how often, myself included, people miss that moment. And they get it in their head that they need the game to go long. They get it in their head that they need to defend. And that mm-hmm. if they let their opponent attack, that they're going to die. So I'm right. never going to attack because I need my blockers back.
I'm the control deck. Yeah,
exactly.
Right. I can't attack if my opponent has creatures.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody here played StarCraft.
Yeah.
I used to love StarCraft, and my favorite way to play, if I was playing against the computer, was to build up this impenetrable base that was triple guarded on every side and just build it up and up and up and up and overwhelm everybody like 3 hours later.
Yeah. I think that's how I started too.
Yeah. That doesn't work in that game if you're playing a real human being opponent, because right. over the course of those 3 hours, your opponents aren't doing nothing and they're not building up an impenetrable base.
Right.
They're building up a strike force that can just sneak through one spot and kill everything you've done.
Right. Or they're just taking every single resource on the map. And so even if your impenetrable base is beating them down at a 3-to-1 ratio, it's fine because they have like an 8-to-1 resource advantage.
Yes. And so now that you know that we're all double dorks on every access we can, I think the analogy is really apt here. You are good to hunker down. You're good to get at your defenses. You're good to counter their spells. You're to discard, to interrupt whatever they're doing and make the game go long.
But up to a point.
Up to a point. After that point, and it's different in every game, and it's an art, not a science, to figure out when that point is. After that point, every turn you delay isn't giving you more opportunity to get answers. You've already got your answers. It's giving them an extra draw step. It's giving right. them an extra untap. It's giving them another chance to not die. And, you know, if you miss that point by being a little too early, well, you might be in a lot of trouble. You might open yourself up when they still have the opportunity to beat you down and kill you. If you wait too late, you give them more opportunity to draw into it. And I'm not going to say that it's better to err on the side of early or late. It's really a fuzzy thing, and it's different in every game. But that's how hard it is, and that's how important it is that you practice the different matchups and you get the feel for that to understand when your deck needs to turn on that dime and attack. Because even if you're an aggro deck, you're going to be the control sometimes. And sometimes your storm deck that has been countering or discarding or interfering, at some point you eventually just need to go off.
Right.
Before we move on, I want to actually give a shout out to our sponsor. As you know, we are sponsored by CoolStuffInc.com, which has a really good rewards program where the more you purchase, the more points you get on your account. You don't use those points up. It's just almost like experience points where they track it. And the more points you have, the more discounts you get. So you get percentages off all the things you buy, singles and sealed product. So that's really nice. We actually have a specific sponsor just for today as well. Sleep. Have you ever been tired? Try sleep. Have you ever been up for 24 hours and you go into 5 pre-releases? You might try some sleep. Have you ever been driving in the car? Well, sleep might not be for you, but maybe you should pull over and try sleep. Every blue mage sleeps, and if you try hard enough, every reg mage sleeps too. Sleep, mm-hmm. It's what's for after dinner.
All right.
Moving on. Sideboarding is also really relevant in who is the beatdown and who's not, in that you should know in game 2 whether you're on the play or the draw. You should know that. If you don't, then I've got some slightly more introductory podcasts I can redirect you to.
Yeah.
And you also should know what the matchups are. It's very interesting. And this is – I'm going to steal a story. This is a story that I recently heard on Limited Resources. So it's out there, though, of somebody who game 1 in response to a Thoughtseize, your opponent reveals their hand – your opponent reveals their hand and discards a card of your choice. In response to his opponent playing that, he conceded game 1 because his opening hand was terrible. He knew he was probably not going to win game 1. It's debatable whether he would have or not. So he conceded right there so that his opponent wouldn't know what he was. The problem was all he had seen were three spells. Three spells and a land. And so he sideboarded thinking that he knew what his opponent's deck was. He sideboarded completely wrong. He turned his best matchup into an unwinnable matchup because he was trying to one-up his opponent and keep information, but he really just kept information from himself. That is a high-level thing, trying to concede and trying to hide information from your opponent. There is benefit in keeping information from your opponent. Trust us when we say that is not going to win you many games. You are better off just trying to win.
Wait. Are you telling that conceding games, like, on the second or third turn in response to a discard spell targeting me does not win me games?
Usually not.
Yeah.
That there is value to that kind of idea. He's not necessarily dumb in principle. Let's just say that as much as who's on the play is below our podcast, that one's past our podcast. You really want to get down the stuff we're talking about first. And if you're an expert at this, okay, we'll have a conversation about the next stuff.
It's still apparently, our guess is it's still probably not the right play.
Yeah.
99 and some also fraction of the remaining 1%.
Conceding rarely wins you games. That's the moral of the story.
Conceding rarely wins you games. All right, that is the takeaway from today's podcast.
But you should know what your opponent's playing. You should have played out game 1 enough. Unless you won on turn 1, you should have seen what they're doing. And you should recognize it because you've been listening to this podcast. He's going to tell you about every deck in the format eventually. So you should know whether you're the beatdown or not. You should know whether what your opponent's going to be trying to do on their turn 1. You're going to know whether they're doing their turn 1 before or after yours, whether they have the counter spells, whether they're trying to control. A lot of time it's going to be really easy. You know, if I am playing against Miracles, well, I have answers, so if they get their lockdown, I can still get out from under it, put pressure on them to close out the game quick. But I'm the beatdown. I really want to just try to win as fast as I can to get out before they lock me down. And I know that in particular. This is a way where you can eliminate dead cards. If you have counter spells, but you know in this matchup you are completely and utterly the beatdown and are never the control, you right. might side out your counter spells because you just need to go faster. And not necessarily the counter spells are ever dead cards, but you if you can't afford to leave mana open, then counter spells that cost mana are not going to be probably very playable. Bad. Right. Yeah. And beyond just knowing when to attack and not, beyond knowing when to make them discard versus building up your own board, is knowing what kind of deck do you want to play. We will definitely have at least one entire episode eventually about sideboarding. But when you sideboard, you get to pick a new deck that you want to play. And you might remember we talked about the different types of decks and about how many of them are hybrids. Well, if I'm playing Delver, Delver is a tempo aggro with disruption and counter spells, where they're trying to get down a little beater and get him in for a lot of attacking and stop your opponent from doing anything fast enough. Mm-hmm. They generally are the beatdown against fair decks. The thing is,
Delver's actually one of those weird decks in that they kind of go back and forth a lot.
Exactly. And that's why I wanted to use that as an example. Their plan is to play a creature, beat down with it, and just keep doing that and close right, out and the game fast.
Right.
But they are on purpose a hybrid so that they can easily become a control. They have lots of counter spells. Depending on what Delver deck they're playing, they might have discard, they might have burn, they might have removal or exile or something else. And if they're in a matchup against Storm, well, they know they need to bring in every counterspell they can find, because if they can stop their beatdown opponent,
right,
they've got inevitability. They've got just good cards through their whole deck.
Delver of Secrets is inevitability sometimes. It's right. kind of weird. But,
yeah. That is the situation. And in game two, if you brought an aggro beatdown, no counterspells Delver deck to a Storm competition, you would lose every game. You would lose if you brought that deck.
Right.
If you brought I'm the control and I also have some Delvers in my deck to that, you'd probably win a lot, actually.
Yeah.
And so which deck do you want to bring to game two and game three? That's the question. And knowing that and being ready to shift and to not feel tied to your initial assumptions, to your normal role, or even to your initial 60-card deck is really important. Is there anything else you really want to talk about who's the beatdown? This is a huge topic, and like always, I feel like we're doing short shrift and a bad job at it. But we want to keep these digestible. We want to move on to the next topic. And we want to give you a lot of arrows in your quiver to be able to grow.
Well, we also, to a certain extent, we want to get this in. We would love to be able to talk about this at more length with a lot of examples. We're really not ready to do that. We just haven't talked about enough other things, but we wanted to get this in earlier so that we would be able to refer to this concept later when we're doing strategic analysis of other decks and other game states. So, we'll flesh this concept out gradually as we go.
Right. Before we finish, then, if that's not, I think we've got do you have a banned card of the day for us?
Banned card of the day. Yeah. We're actually gonna in the spirit of just kind of giving short shrift to things, we're going to have a 6-for-1 here today. Mox Emerald, Mox Jet, Mox Pearl, Mox Ruby, Mox Sapphire, and just for fun, Soul Ring.
Okay.
These are all kind of the same card to a certain extent. The Moxen, certain pretentious people, including myself, believe is the correct pluralization of Mox. They're all artifacts for 0 mana that tap for a mana of a particular color, and by the name of the card, you should probably be able to guess which one is which.
Unless you're colorblind, I thought Jet was red as a youth. You're laughing, but I'm not kidding. I failed at Carmen Sandiego games because I never knew what colors they were talking about. The villain has robin-colored hair. What the heck does that mean? Nobody talks like that, Carmen Sandiego.
No one does talk like that. That's a fair
impression. But okay, so it's an artifact for 0 mana, and it taps for a green if it's the emerald. Well, that sounds like it's just a forest. It's a forest that dies to shatter? No thanks.
Yeah, it's a forest that dies to shatter and doesn't take up your land drop.
Oh. So what you're saying is I can play a grizzly bear, a 2/2 for 2 on turn 1.
Right.
Wow, that's overpowered.
or
a 15 a 15-15 on turn one with haste.
Right, yeah. Your combo deck gets there one turn faster. Your opponent gets one less turn to draw a counter spell or a discard spell, and it's broken.
Or you open up three of them in your opening hand, and now you just get to jump to turn four instantaneously.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So
these
are broken.
Yeah, they're very broken because they break the rule of mana. They break the rule of one land per turn. Anything that breaks that rule is dangerous. Some are fine. Some are playable in Legacy. For example, I think we talked about Lotus Petal is basically sort of like this, but a one-time use, and then it's gone. So and that sees play too, even though it
sees a pretty significant amount of play.
Yeah, despite the fact that you have to sacrifice it to use it, and these are just repeatably usable. They're gratuitously powerful. They're debatably the best. They are definitely in the top 10 best cards ever made.
Ever,
and particularly by their ubiquity. Every single deck would run at least one of these for whatever color they're doing. A lot of decks would run all of them just because.
Yeah, these are vintage staples, as you might imagine, and yeah, a lot of decks. Don't, vintage that are one color may still run all five Moxen.
Because even if they just make colorless mana,
still really good.
Yeah, still really good.
Which is why we threw Sol Ring in here. Sol Ring is two colorless mana, taps to make two colorless mana, and it only costs one. So, yeah, people play, like, Sol Ring is too good. Well, that means that Mox Emerald is too good in your mono blue deck, too.
Yeah,
because they both do effectively the same thing on the first turn.
Now, for some reason that eludes me, Commander, Sol Ring is legal and the Moxes aren't. Debatably, Sol Ring is more powerful. I've talked to people who do vintage cube kind of things, and they say that they'd take Sol Ring over one of the Moxen because,
it doesn't tie you to a color.
It doesn't tie you to a color, but also, okay, your turn one, do you want two mana on turn one? Yeah, that'd be great. But you'd much rather have four mana on turn two.
On turn two,
and five mana on turn three. Just the fact that it's basically two Moxen in one. And just effectively sort of comes into play tapped.
No, this isn't a Commander podcast. I am of the opinion that Sol Ring probably should be banned in Commander. I love the card, and I have a bunch of them, and I play them, but it's too swingy, and it's just obnoxious. The main reason I think that the Moxen are banned and the Sol Ring is not is that Sol Ring is about $2 or $3, and the cheapest Mox you can lay hands on is maybe like $500.
That's probably it. I do want to say also Vintage, which we're not a Vintage podcast, but Vintage has a restricted list of cards you can only play one of because they don't like banning things. The whole idea is you get to play with almost everything there. These are all restricted there, where you can't play four Mox Emeralds in your deck because, the idea of one land per turn would be irrelevant. People would stop playing lands.
Right.
Some of them sort of already do. So if it's restricted in Vintage, it's either a card draw spell or it's probably banned in Legacy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that is it for the Moxen. If you ever see one in a thrift store, you can send that to Jamie Keller at GatheringMagic.com. Now, how can people reach you, Drew?
They can reach me at mtgdrewwalton@gmail.com. And if, Jamie, you figured out how to get cards, like physical paper cards, sent to your email address, I'm curious, and you can...
Working on it. I am Jamie, the number 7, Keller, at gmail.com and on Twitter. And the show is legacyweaponpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your questions. We are actually next episode. We said we never promised what the next episode is going to be. Well, we got a special one, and I think it's going to be next. Should be having a guest, and we should be addressing a listener question. So stay tuned. We'll keep those secret for now, though.
Yes.
Until next time, just remember, preparation is the best legacy weapon. Thanks. Everybody always thinks that he's wrong, but just remember, when in doubt, Leshrac's always right. I think I should still do another one. No, I don't think that was good either. I'm getting worse at these.